This is Almost 107, a Fanshawe College journalism student podcast. Get real.
Identity and the expression of gender have always been in close ties with fashion. It holds truth within both cultural and historical contexts, and holds high importance for those facing oppression in a black and white thinking world. Yet what we perceive to be the fashionable norms in Western society is not true for other cultures and has changed throughout history. For those in the queer community, it's been used as a tool to break boundaries amidst all the odds stacked against us.
To explore beyond the limits that our society and culture places upon us.
To look at you and see you dressing out of the norm, it's really important and it just connects people, really.
Is it maybe a little individualized? Sure, but I do think that is one of the good things. That's the beautiful thing about fashion, is being able to express yourself in your own personal identity through that.
In today's episode of Almost 107, I'll be speaking with queer individuals who hold both personal and professional experiences to learn more about how the fashion world has been impacted and shaped by gender.
My name's Reed Adam. I'm 24 years old and I'm a sustainable fashion designer and fiber artist.
My name is Ella Rose Brown. I am currently in a one-year master's program at Western University studying gender, sexuality, and women's studies. I'm 21 years old, and I've been in London for 5 years now.
I'll just start off by asking, how does your personal fashion relate to your identity and gender expression?
I am genderqueer, and so, you know, being able to play around with gender through fashion is really fun and important to me. I guess I would describe my style differently day to day. I'm a bit of a shapeshifter. I like a kitsch fashion, though. I like a little bit of camp. I like something weird. I like eccentric.
I feel like there's no one thing that could be used to describe it. Overall, I like to be dressed up. I feel like I have kind of a more formal style. I like to wear like trousers and collared shirts, ties, vests, blazers, all that kind of stuff. But really like put in my own vibe into it.
Clothing is the way we present ourselves to the world and acts as a first impression when others meet us. This expression can be masculine, feminine, androgynous, or anywhere along the spectrum you feel you fall, and is most times seen as an indicator for gender. Labels ascribed to different queer individuals such as butch, a lesbian with a more masculine appearance, or femboy, typically a gay man with feminine attributes, are often expressed through things like fashion. In a recent report by Statistics Canada, 1.3 million Canadians reported being 2SLGBTQ+, with 10.5% being between 15 to 24, and 8.1% being transgender. These numbers are likely higher because of things like people who are closeted, not sure, or maybe just don't feel comfortable disclosing, but show that issues relating to queerness impact so many people in our society.
Like, in my own identity, I would consider myself mask for sure, but I think my style is definitely a bit more feminine than you would expect for someone who identifies that way, I think. And, like, I think it's really just, like, the breaking down of barriers. Like, while I do identify as more masculine, I think that shouldn't limit you in what you wear at all or how you express yourself.
I definitely agree, and I'm the same way where maybe my personal identity isn't defined by how I dress. I'd say I typically present pretty feminine, but internally I feel a little bit more fluid, so there's definitely a difference. What does fashion mean to you?
Overall, fashion is really like a bid for connection. So when you're being true to yourself and like wearing completely your own personal style, like you're not trying to conform to anything, like the trends and that sort of thing. It's really, really important and, you know, it just connects people, really.
What's been your experience moving from a small town and then doing several years of school in a bigger city like London?
I do think in the bigger cities, there's just like a lot more interest from other people. People are excited to see what you're wearing. I mean, when I was growing up, of course, people were too, but they didn't. I don't know. I feel like there were less people who were looking for that, who, you know, wanted to see something fun going on, who appreciated it. I mean, I definitely did get a lot of appreciation even when I was like in high school, but it's definitely a different vibe. And I think coming to London also and kind of like spending the early years of my adulthood in London, it kind of feels in a sense that I grew up here. I kind of like discovered myself a lot more when I was here. And I've definitely developed a lot more in my style since moving here.
It's definitely intriguing how things not only shift from nationally to locally, but also within smaller and larger cities as well, as you've kind of expressed. On a broader scale, we have seen maybe not a rise in traditionalism, but people are just more comfortable speaking to conservative ideas that a lot of times can align with fashion and gender. From your standpoint, as someone who is in the industry, do you think we'll see a political impact within fashion?
I hope so. I really hope so. I think fashion needs to move towards the idea of like gender fluidity and genderlessness, just to move fashion forward. Because I feel like for so many years, fashion has been used as a tool to enforce gender roles and enforce conformity. And because fashion is cyclical, like we keep going back to things, we keep using the past to inform our future. Everything has already been done before, and it's been done like hundreds of times before. We're just repeating everything. But I think, you know, to move forward, what we haven't done is really get rid of these categories and just live freely and design freely.
As someone who's getting an education in gender and sexuality, and also someone who personally has experience in fashion, what do you think is the translation between how we dress ourselves and the societal expectations that we deal with?
I mean, iconic feminist theorist Judith Butler paints it really well in like their theory of gender performativity, this idea that we perform our gender on a day-to-day basis. And I really kind of like this idea because that's what gender is. Every day we go out and we attempt to perform a certain gender. When we are trying to conform to mainstream aesthetics, we are trying to perform a mainstream gender, a normative gender. So I like to think about gender in terms of kind of a day-to-day performance. When it comes to masculinity and femininity and how it's posited as so binary, man, a lot of that, I gotta say, I feel like a lot of it comes from colonialism. A lot of it comes from pushing a Western agenda. And I do think at the end of the day, it's harmful.
Yeah, I mean, I think you bring up a good point of who this really affects. And even using the language of harmfulness, do you think that it is more harmful to some more than others, or is it kind of all around the board impacting people the same?
It definitely impacts certain people more than others. Queer people might specifically feel the need to conform to a certain aesthetic. But I'll also say that a lot of racialized people might feel a similar thing when it comes to like cultural attire and feeling that they should conform to like a Western aesthetic. So I would say it's also like an intersectional thing for sure. We can also kind of look at, when we talk about fashion, we should also acknowledge for queer people, a lot of those fashion inspirations come from Black and other racialized communities. So it is important to kind of acknowledge that it isn't just about queer people and how they feel they need to conform, but it's a bigger issue.
Yeah, I agree. Of course, it's definitely a multifaceted issue that we can only look at in its entirety from an intersectional lens and how Eurocentric standards impact various marginalized groups. Even within queerness itself, obviously, there are different experiences with gender and fashion depending on your ethnicity, where you come from, how you're impacted by cis-heteronormative white standards. So what masculinity and femininity may look like in one marginalized group could look different in another. In terms of modern queerness, what is your take on queer fashion nowadays and how it's kind of evolving?
Yeah, I mean, I think we take a lot of inspiration from like drag queens and how they kind of play around with gender. I think recently we've been seeing a lot of more feminine presenting men. It's been nice to see kind of a different form of masculinity that isn't so rigid. Men have maybe felt more comfortable to wear more jewelry, accessorize more. I've seen a couple crop tops here and there, fun things like that. I think there's also been a big push in just very like eclectic fashion and like very in your face. This kind of like minimalist aesthetic is not super popular in queer aesthetics specifically. So when it comes to alternative fashion, we're seeing a lot of over-accessorizing.
So like moving away from minimalism towards maximalism kind of thing.
Yeah, it's leaning towards maximalism. And also like I think part of it is like identity politics. It's about expressing yourself. Is it maybe a little individualized? Sure. But I do think that is one of the good things. That's the beautiful thing about fashion, is being able to express yourself in your own personal identity through that.
Conversations like these lead me into how the relationship between gender and fashion has been especially relevant to those who are transgender and gender nonconforming, who may use it as a form of self-expression. It's been taken up for political debate in Western society at a time where trans rights are being put under a microscope in both Canada and the US. In a recent speech from United States Military Secretary Pete Hegseth, he said that there will be no more, quote, dudes in dresses or, quote, gender delusion in their army. Now, statements like these are political opinions and were not always deemed the norm. Historically, opposite fashion trends have existed within times and places they were majorly accepted. To dive deeper into this complicated history, I spoke with Jacob Evoy, a professor at Western University that teaches the gender and fashion course, to find out about this evolution.
Fashion and gender have always been connected, but our understandings are continually changing and evolving, and that is based upon, well, a lot of different things. When we look at kind of our modern day gender trends and our modern day fashion trends, we can trace some of these legacies back from colonization. And a large part of this, especially in the 18th and 19th centuries, when we have this rise in kind of pseudosciences of race science and trying to categorize all of these different groups of peoples based upon whatever traits the researchers are choosing. This really largely comes about through histories of colonization. So Europeans and colonizers had to come up with a way to justify the violence that was being inflicted upon Indigenous peoples around the world. And one of the ways that they did this was through then a categorization of race. And so through this categorization, they also then re-entrenched and reinforce new understandings of sex and gender. So it's not just that you are a woman, it's that you are a white woman, because within this hierarchy, they needed white women to be viewed higher than women of color and racialized men. And so through this, there was a real entrenchment. This is obviously a very gross oversimplification, but there was an entrenchment of our ideas of sex and gender. And so a way in which this was enforced was through fashion, because fashion is one of the easiest ways in which we quickly view and see somebody and we can categorize them, right? Fashion, it's its own language system. And so we understand, growing up in the society that we do, we are taught these codes and meanings. We are taught this language. And so we understand that when we see X piece of fabric cut in a specific way, worn on, and if it is worn by someone, that means this person is a woman, this person is a man.
Is there a specific example you can think of that really showcases how much times have changed in relation to these ideas of acceptable fashion?
I always use King Louis XIV of France. Mm-hmm. That's like 1600s and very early 1700s. King Louis is viewed as like the epitome. The French court is one of the strongest in the West. Well, it is the strongest in the West. And King Louis is viewed as the height of masculinity. He is viewed as the pinnacle of Western civilization. You know, he built the Palace of Versailles. He's very extravagant. And there are so many portraits of him that when we look at him now, there's maybe the most famous portrait of him. You know, he's wearing tights. He's wearing high heels, because high heels were originally for men, so that when they were riding horses, their feet wouldn't slip out of the stirrups. You could more easily, like, you could put the stirrup in the heel, and so you could ride more easily. And he's wearing a big flowy cape, and he's got a wig, and he's got makeup on, and he's posed like somewhat, you know, hand on hips. So that for the aristocrats of that time, this is the pinnacle of masculinity. You know, it was viewed as something that was a great honor to be able to be in the room while King Louis was dressing himself, let alone like if you were the one that handed him an article of clothing. This was a huge honor. Whereas today, you know, if a world leader, if President Trump or Mark Carney, or, you know, even a past leader, if Barack Obama came out and was wearing tights, high heels, flowing capes, a big, long haired, curly wig and makeup, that would be viewed, I think it's safe to say, quite unfavorably. Mm-hmm. It would probably almost be viewed as drag today. Right. And so these are some of the ways in which we see gender norms changing.
In my personal life, I've gone through various seasons with my relationship to fashion. I grew up in a more conservative religious household, and most of my family have always stuck to traditional views. It wasn't easy being the closeted queer kid who loved alternative and unique fashion, but couldn't show myself to others the way I wanted to because of either my life at home or even the cis heteronormative friends I had surrounded myself with. But now, as a 24-year-old, it's been quite liberating to lean into both masculine and feminine clothing choices to find what I'm most comfortable with. Through unpacking historical trends and understanding why we hold such rigid views of gender norms in North America, I've endured the hard and slow journey of coming to know myself outside of what has been imposed on me. With learning that gender and my personhood are not defined by the fabric of my body, I don't feel the need to conform to norms in order to appease others or feel like I hold value as a person. All this to say, it's a fact that your gender expression, masculinity versus femininity, and the binaries imposed on us are widely impacted by the time and place we're living in, opposed to these things being inherent to our gender or sex. Whether you're queering fashion or just dressing in a way that feels like you, the choice is ultimately yours. Thanks for joining me in this episode of Almost 107. I'm Naomi Youngren. Find more episodes on our website 1069dx.com or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.